Welcome back to another episode of Pricks on Flicks with Chris and Vince, minus Vince. With us today in our studio is, as always, Threaten, our esteemed producer. Say hello.
Hey, guys.
And also in studio is a good friend, Scott McGinnis. Say hello. Scott.
Hi, everybody.
Scott, welcome to the show. I started that off with a Seinfeld hello, because Vince despises Seinfeld and Scott loves Seinfeld, so this was my opportunity.
I'll never understand people that say they despise Seinfeld.
He doesn't like Curb either.
I lost a lot of respect for Vince right now.
Yet I have no sense of humor.
I've had the oddest experience with Seinfeld in that I only watched my first whole episode about 3 years ago. I had the first three seasons on DVD. It's one of my brother's favorite shows. Both of my parents used to watch it because it was on three different channels, almost like they're 24 hours a day. There's a certain channel. If you have cable, you can find it. It's either on TBS, it's either on Channel 9, it's either on something.
Absolutely.
For some reason, I never watched a whole episode start to finish. And then when when it got on Hulu, I was like, now I actually have to sit down and at least be able to say that I watched a whole episode. Not that I don't like it. I think it's awesome. I think it's one of the great sitcoms. It's up there. It's top three, depending on who you ask.
Back when Blockbuster was still a thing, I remember going and renting all the seasons, and I went back and watched them all straight through. That was when I realized that Jerry's apartment had the same door trim as I have in my house. But
it was appointment viewing on Thursday nights for my family. The only thing all four of us ever did together was watch Seinfeld.
All right, enough of the Seinfeld talk today. Well, first, let me start off by saying, Vince is on holiday, so...
On holiday.
So he is not with us today, and we did record two episodes, so we thought. Scott was in studio with us, Threaten was not. We recorded two episodes to cover the 2 weeks. Last Thursday, you heard our banked episode, and we have to re-record the episode that was supposed to come out tomorrow because the files were there. I mean, we had like hour and a half files, but there was no audio.
There's no audio.
And Scott said he killed it, and he's a little upset.
I was fantastic.
That's what I heard.
I make no promises for today, but last week I was fantastic.
I believe it.
So most of the stuff we talk about today, we already talked about on the shows. You guys just didn't get to hear it. That was only for me, Vince, and Scott.
I enjoyed it.
5 hours I spent here just having a conversation that nobody's ever going to hear. Okay, so today we're going to talk about Ex Machina, who was the director?
Vince Alex Garland.
Oh, thank you, Scott. Scott is a man of knowledge. Ex Machina and Annihilation, because Annihilation just came out, and we watched both of those. We are going to talk about Roseanne, which aired two nights ago, depending on when you're listening. Tomb Raider, Vince and I went and saw that. Scott and Threaten haven't seen it, but I could tell you what Vince thought. So can Scott, because we had that conversation. The Push. Okay, when we talk about The Push, this episode will have a timestamp in the description because we cannot talk about this show without spoiling it. If you have not watched this, you need to watch it and probably skip through when we talk about it and then go back after you watch it and listen, because it was, you got to watch it and you don't want to spoil it for you, so skip through that. Barry, which is in HBO.
HBO.
HBO comedy.
Right after Silicon Valley.
And then, as always, goes without saying, we will have our third act. And I guess I got to say, because Vince says it every episode, we got a great episode for you today. And then I always say, hopefully.
We'll see.
All right. So, Ex Machina.
Written and directed by Alex Garland.
Starring Domhnall Gleeson, Alicia Vikander, and Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, those are the three.
Three of note. There's a couple other people who don't matter. So, Ex Machina is about... Oscar Isaac plays a guy named Nathan who owns a... what kind of company? A
tech company, search engine, Google-ish.
Yeah, he lives in a remote place by himself. And he develops a AI robot. And he has an employee named Caleb who he flies out to his remote island, says he won some competition.
Won a contest, yeah.
And he wants to have him do a Turing test, which, you want to explain a Turing test?
You explained it to me last week. Let's see if I remember.
You didn't know? Okay, see if you remember.
Testing the AI to see if it can pass for human?
Yeah, basically, the result you want from the person performing the test is, I cannot distinguish a difference between a self-aware real person and this AI. So there's a twist at the end, of course, but I thought this movie was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, when last week when we were talking and you guys had said that it had flown under the radar, I didn't necessarily believe you because I had seen it. I'd heard good things, so I checked it out. I passed it along to my friends. They all checked it out. And then through the week, I was asking around, and surprisingly few number of people have seen this movie.
Well, I remember seeing the title, Ex Machina, but I never knew what it was.
Right.
Yeah, I know mainstream movie-wise, it did like kind of get past everybody's radar, but with movie buffs, like people that like watch whatever's, you know, they watch everything during the year, like the indies, it was on everybody's top 10 list.
Deservedly so.
And it was awesome.
There was really good Oscar nominations. Oscar winner for original screenplay?
Really? We probably said that last week. But
nominated for sure.
Alicia Vikander, who is the star of the new Tomb Raider. And was this one of her first movies? It had to be early.
I think it was, if not her first, it was one of those first few, because after that she had a couple roles. But a lot of it rode on how good she was in it. It rode on how good she was.
She was definitely the driving force in the movie. Yeah. All the actors were excellent.
Right.
But
and not that we're Mr. Skin or anything, but we do like to point out when you get to see a good-looking actress nude, and you get some nudity out of Alicia Vikander.
Butts!
Boobs are extra. Which we can't call the title that anymore. You heard the story last week, right? Because every time we name a title with boobs or anything like that, we get porn bots.
We can't get a regular comment on our website or iTunes page.
But God forbid
we put boobs or butts in the title of a show.
One of us suggested last week that we just name the episode Porn Bots. But with the name porn, I'm sure you'd get a ton of porn bots. So, I remember saying last week that if I had one gripe about this movie, it was that we didn't get enough dialogue between Caleb and Ava, the AI, because those scenes were so good. I thought it was phenomenal. And they were short scenes. I didn't think there was enough of them.
I thought the balance was perfect only because when the ending happened, it made you think that the interactions were enough so that the feelings that he had for her were reciprocated, that she wouldn't just do what she did.
Oh, right.
Like if they were together long enough, then maybe it would have been, it was just like the perfect balance of conversation. You're right. They were perfect because you were like, is there going to be violence? Is there going to be sex?
I thought there was going to be. What's
going to happen here? And what's he thinking? Knowing that this is a robot, knowing that he's a really logical dude, but still like falling for her.
All right, question. Would you have?
Probably.
Would you have?
No question in my mind.
That's a yes.
Yeah.
I would have too. I don't care that she was a robot. She looked real enough.
I would have gone about like, so in the story, when you see all the like other sex androids and he comes to the realization that this dude's making like a bunch of sex robots, I would have been like, yeah, you know what? It's time for me to leave. Like, I would not have been like, oh, let me explore, you know, let me like figure out what else is going on and then try to save her.
I think Nathan was a good dude.
Yeah.
But he would have creeped the fuck out of me.
Yeah, me too.
I think I would have been like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like we were saying last week, he seems like he was a normal-ish guy that just was isolated and
he wanted to party, man.
Yeah.
He wanted a friend besides a robot.
And the thing about, I just love the way the movie ends. I don't want to do any spoilers since we have mentioned that it is underwatched, but it's just the way it ends and you are following these characters and you think you know what's happening and you've chosen your side, so to speak, of who you're focusing on, and then it just flips it on the end. And the last 5 minutes, you're like, wow,
yeah,
that was excellent.
I heard somebody say they set that movie up for a sequel. I don't think so.
There could be a sequel. I hope there's not.
Right. I don't think there's going to be a sequel. Just because it's not a closed door ending doesn't mean it's set up for a sequel. I mean, Gone Girl didn't have a closed door ending. There's not going to be a sequel.
A lot of movies are like that. They open it. And,
right.
Inception. But it seems fine.
Yeah, I love the ending.
It ended well. It ended not the way I expected, but once it ended, I couldn't think of it ending any other way where I would have been as happy.
See, I don't want to spoil it either, but I like that it teetered the line of logic and emotion. Like, is this going to play out logically, or is this going to play out emotionally? Is it going to play out like it would play out for humans, or is it going to play out like it would logically play out for robots?
Exactly.
And how did you think it played out?
Well, that's why.
Both?
No.
Oh, see, I thought it. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I don't know. Do you spoil? Because it's. I mean, it is a 4-year-old movie or more.
Is it that old?
I mean, I guess for the robot, I think it turned out logically. For the person, it turned out emotionally.
Well, yeah.
Well,
yeah, because of the tragic part of it.
Right.
That's why it's emotional.
We either need to stop this conversation or we have to go full spoiler.
Yeah, so it's like full spoiler or no.
Well, what do you think? Should we spoil?
It's on you.
Yeah, let's spoil it.
Fire away.
All right, so in the end, it turns out that Nathan wasn't really testing his AI to see if she was self-aware. He was testing her to see if that she would use Caleb emotionally to escape. And she absolutely did. Caleb, I think, legitimately was falling in love with her and wanted to get her out so that they could live together. And she fucking pulled the burn.
Yeah, and then that's what I'm saying. Like, the whole time you think you're watching this story of Caleb, and then at the end you've been watching the story of Ava the entire time, and yeah, it's not at front of mind. Just Caleb's the focus. His exploring the house and his.
So it ends with her killing Nathan, and locking Caleb in the house. And as he's yelling at her, Ava, come back, come back. She just
saw that as that's exactly how she was programmed.
Exactly.
So, if you're programmed to do something as a computer, those factors aren't even emotional. Like, the fact that he was screaming doesn't even compute for her anymore. So it wasn't even, I don't even know if it could be considered murder. She just was acting exactly as she was programmed to act, full logic based on the logic that she was programmed with.
Yeah, but see, it just sucked for him. I didn't see it acting as a program. I seen it acting as her
being manipulative.
How
was she manipulative?
Passing Nathan's test, manipulating him into falling in love with her so that he would devise a way for her to escape. Meanwhile, she didn't give a shit about Caleb,
which is what she was programmed to do.
Okay, but then what about the test that Nathan was performing? Because if he'd have just programmed her to do that, he wouldn't have needed a test.
Yeah, that's true.
He wanted to see if she would devise this plan on her own.
Yeah, it's the intelligence part of the artificial intelligence.
At least that's what I got from it.
Yeah. And I also think that the actress, the way that she was, went such a long way for you to also fall for her.
Oh, yeah.
And be like, I mean, I don't know if I would have gone so far as to fall in love with her, like, because I'm like, that's a metal robot thing.
Yeah.
Like, you have a pretty hard crush. Like, she was.
Absolutely.
Like that. And I guess it's also not real. I don't know. It's fake. But they put that face on there and she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when she wasn't in an outfit and had no hair or anything, because she was just a robot with a face.
A sympathetic face.
Yes.
A sad face.
Absolutely. And then she would put a dress on and like nylons to cover up all her machine parts, and she would put a wig on and she'd look like a real person.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Before we hit Annihilation, we always ask our guests 3 questions, and we'll get to those now, Scott.
Hit me.
First question. I'm not going to make the joke again about the how many walkers have you killed and stuff like that.
Okay.
But favorite movie and maybe favorite genre of movie?
My favorite movie of all time is Back to the Future. I fully realize it's not the greatest movie ever made, but it is the movie that I will watch every single time it's on TV.
That is the thing about a favorite movie. Most often, it's not a great movie. A lot of times, and Back to the Future is not a guilty pleasure.
Back to the Future is a great movie.
Yes,
but it's
not a guilty pleasure.
But it's not the greatest movie.
Right. There are very few people that... Citizen Kane is widely considered the greatest movie of all time. And I don't know how many people are going to say that that's their favorite movie.
Pompous people will say that's their favorite movie. When really they go home and they're watching Old School, you know, or something like that.
Right.
Which is also a good movie, but yeah. It's not.
Could be somebody's favorite movie.
It should be.
But not the greatest movie. Second favorite TV show of all time.
The best TV show ever.
Oh, Breaking Bad.
No, The Wire.
Then you're wrong.
No, I'm absolutely correct.
The Wire is good. It would probably rank. It might crack top five for me. It wouldn't be number one. Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones would be one and two for me.
That's fine.
I don't know which order.
Those are both excellent shows, but The Wire is better.
And I think Dexter would be number three.
See, and that's where you lose me.
But this is not a show about my top five. So, The Wire, starring guy from Tomb Raider, Dominic West.
Yes.
Dominic West. And some other people.
McNulty, one of the all-time great television characters.
Yeah, he was great. Better TV characters were Walter Bishop from Fringe, Boyd Crowder from Justified. Did you ever watch Justified?
I watched the first season.
Oh, Boyd Crowder's great. And also
really
Hank Moody. Hank Moody from Californication.
You guys mention Hank Moody all the time.
Oh, he's great.
I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Californication.
It was good.
But Hank Moody was great.
First couple episodes were really good. First couple seasons were really good. Last couple seasons, eh.
Do you like boobs and
butts?
There's a lot of it on that show.
I enjoy both of those.
Yes.
A lot of butts.
And then last question. If you could spend the night or day or whatever, possibly ending in sex, maybe it's just a friendship thing. Vince wants to
take sex out of the equation.
No, make it just about
I'll
sex.
I'll make it just
like,
about sex.
It's got to be a date. And I was like, no, what if, I mean, you just wanted to hang out with a dude? Like, you just wanted to hang out with Hank Moody all day. I mean, you don't get why hanging out with Hank Moody would be so cool, but it would. I mean, you could pick anything here. It could be a girl that could possibly end in sex. Not a guarantee, but possibly if you can swing it.
Well, I can swing it. What?
With that beard and that beard oil you use.
The beard is working. I'm just going to tell you right now, the beard is working.
So much beard oil.
One of my favorite characters, although she's six characters, is... And I can spend as much time as she'll let me, whether is Sarah from Orphan Black, played by Tatiana Maslany.
Now, you and Vince actually had a conversation about this answer last week. And I didn't get to really join in because I've never watched Orphan Black.
Which is shocking to me. You would love it.
Okay, well, it'll get on my list and I'll watch it. But unfortunately, you guys aren't going to get that stunning conversation because Vince isn't here. He's on holiday.
No, Vince asked me which one of the clones I would like to spend the day with. Since we're talking character, not actress, and I chose original street tough punk Sarah. That's more my speed.
That's why I like Vince's questions. That is a Vince question. Which actress, but which clone.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Choose between the six. I think Vince was pushing for me to pick Helena, the crazy Russian.
And the one that got hit by the one that committed suicide at the beginning.
All right, shout out to the brews we're drinking tonight. First one, Sretton brought, it's Three Floyds, War Pigs, Mikella, which... I guess War Pigs is a collaboration between Three Floyds and Mikella. This is called Salmon Pants. It's a premium lager. Pretty delicious.
It's pretty tasty.
I like it. Did you have one of the War Pigs, Scott?
I didn't know.
No, you had the Neapolitan Milk Stout, which we've talked about on the show before. But what's the brewery?
Saugatuck.
Which is in?
Made in Michigan.
That's right.
And it's got a nice 6%. For a stout, that's pretty solid.
What do you think? Because we have actually raved about that Oh, he's taking a sip.
I'm a big fan. Like, it's just, it's really smooth, and then it's got a real nice aftertaste.
I talked about on one episode, and I still don't remember the name of the cookies. The little wafer cookies. Remember the Neapolitan ones, the strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate. When I first smelled it, I was like, oh, it smells exactly like those.
It does smell exactly like this. I was being a poor beer taster. I just went right for it and started drinking it. I didn't even give it the smell test.
Vince said he likes the chocolate wafer cookies. I like the strawberry.
Until you've had the cinnamon wafer cookies, you haven't lived.
I have never had the cinnamon. I'm going to have to try them.
I'm a cinnamon whore, though. So
I had cinnamon apple pancakes the other day.
I'm a cinnamon whore.
I am. I am a whore for cinnamon.
Annihilation.
Annihilation.
Starring.
Well, first off, it follows the trend of our last movie, written and directed by Alex Garland.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie Portman is your lead. Jennifer Jason Leigh. Tessa Thompson.
Who you hate? You hate Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I don't hate Jennifer Jason Leigh. I just feel like there are actresses that can do what she does better than she does.
I remember you saying, if I never see Jennifer Jason Leigh again, it'll be too soon.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. If she just decides to retire and live off her laurels, that'll be good.
Did you see Hateful Eight?
No, I have not seen Hateful Eight.
She's pretty awesome in it.
Yes, she was. She was great.
I need
despicable, awful, rotten, great.
That suits her, I think.
And Hateful Eight was a great bounce back for Quentin Tarantino. Not that he's made terrible movies lately, but this was like stellar, like his first few movies.
I think that's probably why I stayed away. I'm not anti-Tarantino. It's just it hasn't been the draw to me that it used to
be. And I think this one was. I think this one hit back.
Well, as soon as I have 4 hours to devote to this opus that he put together, I will watch it.
It wasn't that long a movie, was it?
I think it's three hours. Like three.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, you don't even know because it's so good, it just flies by.
My problem is I fall asleep at 8:45 at night. So I started at 5. I start a movie at 8:30 and I get 15 minutes and I'm good.
I wish I could fall asleep before 12:30 or 1 in the morning.
I don't know what happened to me. I've turned into an old man and I'm loving it.
All right. Again, we digress. Yes, we were talking about Annihilation.
Do. Oscar Isaac as well. We can't forget him.
Oh, yes.
As right. Natalie Portman's husband.
Maybe.
/ alien. Annihilation.
Sci-fi flick, which we talked about last time. Is this a sci-fi movie or is it a fantasy movie? Because Vince has said before to me that technology defines sci-fi. And they didn't have any technology in this movie that we don't have today.
No, there's beans from somewhere, though.
Which, I think if you throw in aliens, you could throw that in a sci-fi.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, yeah. This was aliens.
It's a being from somewhere that I don't know that lands in.
And we're spoiling this movie because for me, I don't even think you should really watch it.
Read the synopsis or something. It says it's like an alien movie, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's
some weird shit lands on Earth.
They kind of did a reveal
something
at
lands
the end.
On Earth and it develops this thing that they have nicknamed the Shimmer,
mm-hmm.
which is spreading.
And it's kind of like a dome of what to me looks like soapy water.
It does. Yeah, it does. It does look like a when you get your car wash at the car wash, that rainbow soap that they put on it.
And everything in this Shimmer is kind of, I don't want to say cross-breeding, but it cross-mutating.
Mutated, yeah.
So you're getting crocodiles or alligators with like shark-like teeth and other stuff.
In a great scene, a bear that is half skeleton and takes the voices of others and it comes out of their hideous, terrifying mouth.
I'm sorry, you might want to correct yourself. You said great scene.
You didn't enjoy that scene?
The voice? Eh.
The bear scene where they're strapped to the chair, you did not enjoy that scene?
It was creepy. It was a good suspense scene.
It was excellent. It was a really well-made movie.
But the voice thing was...
The acting was good. Even Jennifer Jason Leigh was passable. And I think it wanted me to think more than I was prepared to think.
See,
it was
an
open-ended...
That's my problem with the movie. I felt like it wanted to be this... Ex Machina was a movie that was relevant, thought-provoking, made you really look into it philosophically. This movie didn't. It felt like it wanted to... But it didn't get me there. It didn't make me think
I
about...
I felt that throughout Ex Machina. Right. I feel like at the end of Annihilation, he wanted you to look back on what you just watched and put the pieces together.
Did you?
I did. It was one of those. The reason I like the movie is because it was one of those movies that 2 days later I was still thinking about. So I can't be angry with it.
Chris? Real quick. What,
Chris?
Do you have a movie? Okay, let me answer then. I didn't. Now, I also missed the shimmer in her eye at the end.
Yes.
I didn't notice that. And after I hear about it, it's like, well, that is a little something that I missed that might have made a difference in my viewing of the movie.
It's going to need a second watch. I'm gonna watch it again. I believe it's coming right to Netflix soon because it's a Netflix original movie that they brought out in the theaters.
Real quick, do you have a movie that really stands out that like later just you kept thinking about?
I do. I absolutely do. I saw American Beauty in the theater 3 times. I went to go see it. I went and I left the theater and said, hey, that was a good movie. I enjoyed that. It was wild, but I enjoyed it. And then 2 days later, I was still thinking about it. I went to go see it again. I left the theater saying, that was a great movie. 2 days later, I was still thinking about it. I went back to see it a third time and I left the theater saying, that might be the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Have you seen Three Billboards?
Yes.
Have you changed your mind then?
No, American Beauty is better than Three Billboards.
Oh, you're crazy.
You're nuts.
Do you have a movie that really stuck with you?
Only traumatically. There's movies that I really like that I can't name. The ones that pop into my head are more for trauma.
Yeah.
And that's like Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, yes.
I was traumatized for a good 2 weeks.
Ass
best,
to ass.
Best drug movie. Best movie to talk about, like, don't do drugs.
Should
man.
Be mandatory viewing for high school juniors and
stuff. Absolutely.
They had, like, Basketball Diaries. They had, a couple of the other, like, what do you call it? The Scottish one.
Trainspotting.
They had other ones but nothing comes close to Requiem for a Dream.
The one for me.
For music and nuts.
The one for me is The Mist. The ending of that movie. Oh, I remember
so
like a week
I love
after
the ending of that movie.
A week after I saw the movie, I'd be sitting there not thinking about anything and just all of a sudden be like, God damn, that sucked. Yeah. I mean, just out of nowhere a week later.
That was one where it ended and I shut off the TV, and then you know those movies or scenes in a television show where you shut off the TV and you're just staring at a blank screen for like 10 minutes trying to process what you just saw.
Yeah, I'm telling you, a week later I'd just be like, damn it.
I know. Have you guys ever seen City of God, the movie from Brazil?
No.
Yes. Years
City
ago.
Of God. City of God stuck with me for a good like month.
Yeah.
Because it was the two things that stood out was it is crazy. It's a crazy movie. And back when it came out, I think Gene Siskel Roger Ebert said that it was one of the best movies that he's ever seen. And then I watched it, and it was like the first 10 minutes. I was like, all right, whatever. And then it just fucking kicks your ass, and it does not stop. And then at the end, you find out that it's a true story. I didn't know it was a true story. And not only is it a true story, but there's a scene that they film, and some stuff happens, and they had a news crew film like some event, like a party, where stuff happens at the party. And at the end, they show the real footage, and you're like, oh, my God, like this – not only did this happen through a 20-year span, but this kind of stuff is still happening in like next. It's about Rio, a city next to Rio called the City of God, mm-hmm. where the life expectancy is low, but there's like a crazy amount of like kids getting killed through gang warfare. Not just kids, like children.
Children.
Like 5, 6, 7 years old, they get guns and they go fight in these favelas.
So it's a, I don't want to say fictional movie, but it's actors portraying this movie.
Yeah, it's not a documentary.
And then they show real footage.
Yeah, so like based on true events. I guess. Yeah, where they piece it together.
Right.
So that was one. In America was one that stuck with me for a really long time. That was Roper, when he first started doing reviews with Ebert, mm-hmm. he was like, if you don't think this is the best movie you saw this year, I'm going to give you your money back. And I watched it and I was like, it's like a slow burn. By the time you're done with it, there's two specific scenes that are built to make you cry. And if you don't cry at the end when you find out everything, then you are a robot. So that movie stuck with me. It's great.
That's the test for Vince.
Yeah.
That one.
He's a robot.
Oh, he actually gets a little mad at that now, I think.
Does he really?
He was like, I'm not a robot. I cry at stuff.
Oh, I don't usually cry at anything. I got to be more robotic than Vince. If we went toe-to-toe, because we've talked about a bunch of movies,
and
he's definitely cried more movies than I have.
I cry at Babe, and that's it. The end, every single time.
Never seen it.
What?
And I'm not picking on Vince when I say that. It's just he portrayed himself at first as a robot and saying that nothing really makes me cry.
He's a sensitive sweet guy.
But we've started
guy.
To get to him with like This Is Us and stuff. Well, although he told me to watch that.
I still haven't broken down. Yeah, I can't do it.
Watch
yet.
This Is Us. You'll break down.
Well, I mean,
I think we found the robot in the room.
I'm a bit. I just said I cried at the end of Babe every time. 100 times I've seen it. When he looks down and he says, "That'll do, pig," every time.
Oh, is that what that line's from?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Oh,
When Shrek said it to Donkey, "That'll do, Donkey. That'll do." I didn't know that was a
You've
Babe
line.
You've
never seen Babe.
I've never seen Babe either.
What?
Homework.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Okay, Annihilation. Let's wrap this up real quick.
Yeah, I mean, Vince really liked Annihilation.
Vince loved Annihilation.
He really enjoyed it. So if you value Vince's opinion, watch this movie. You'll probably really like
visually,
it.
Visually?
Which everybody should value Vince's opinion.
Yeah, if he likes it, I'm going to watch it.
Visually, gorgeous.
Yes, it was.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's very well made. The acting's good. The story is solid. They just left me wanting a little bit more at the end. I liked it. I don't know what that would be on a scale.
Yes, I didn't think it was bad. I didn't watch this movie saying that was fucking terrible. That's not what I'm saying. I'm kind of like you where I expected a little more.
Because of Ex Machina?
No, because I watched Ex Machina after.
Okay. Oh, did you?
Yes. I watched Ex Machina after I watched Annihilation. But from the previews and stuff, I expected a little more than just a suspense action movie. I expected something more thought-provoking. And
I think it might be in there, though. I think it might be in there. I went to go see it at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. I might not have been in the right frame of mind.
But I don't think that is she or isn't she is thought-provoking. That's just kind of like an interpretation.
I don't even think that's the point, though. I think that there's a story about marriage and mutation and... It's all in there
but the whole
for
story
us to
about
figure
the,
out.
Like the story with the marriage, the affair, I thought was complete uselessness in the story.
Or was it?
maybe not. Maybe it went over my head.
It needs a second watch. Probably should have done a second watch before we decided to talk about it on a podcast. But it needs a second watch.
All right.
What's next?
So Vince says watch Annihilation. We all say watch
it. Yeah,
it was a decent movie. I mean, I didn't think it was bad. What was next? Are we going to the push?
No, let's talk Roseanne.
Roseanne.
Let's save the push.
Yeah, Roseanne came back. Vince is going to come home and watch it, and we're going to talk about it again next week because he's a big Roseanne fan. Who isn't? I mean, Everybody liked Roseanne when it was on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Roseanne comes back X amount of years later. I don't know, probably.
It's got to be
15,
close to
20,
right?
Right.
I want to say it's 18 years later. I think
be
that's
about
what
that.
It is.
The entire cast is back, including both Beckys.
Yeah.
In addition, we have Debbie from Shameless, the one of the Gallagher girls. Neither of you watch
No, we don't watch Shameless.
You probably should. It's a pretty good show. But so she plays Darlene's daughter.
Okay.
And I mean, it picks up where it left off. 18, 20 years later, whatever it is.
It was...
With the exception of them winning the lottery and Dan dying. That is ignored. Like, it never happened.
Yeah, they sort of just forget about that, which they should.
My wife said something about, didn't they remodel the house at one point? And I said, yeah, but I think that was after the lottery winnings, and they're ignoring that happened.
Right. And I gotta say, I had super low expectations because it's
really?
Been a long time.
I didn't have low expectations it's Roseanne.
Yeah, but it's a network sitcom. And
what if Seinfeld came back?
Well, that world changed. Like the network sitcoms from before and now, it's two totally different worlds.
Exactly. So
it is. They do still have the laugh track, but...
I had high expectations too, and I haven't seen it.
With the laugh track, it's kind of like, it didn't bother me then. So this show coming back with a laugh track, doesn't bother me.
It doesn't.
But
even
when I try to watch
now.
It, when I try to watch a new show with a laugh track, I can't stand it. I hate it. Have you seen The Ranch?
Oh God, that show is awful, though.
Okay, I've had so many people tell me to watch it.
Why?
I don't know. But we started it, me and my wife. 45 seconds in, my wife's like, turn this off. The laugh track's killing me. I was like, yeah, me too.
The only reason I watched it all is, I mean, the whole first, whenever they put the first block on Netflix, I watched them all in like one sitting because I must have been extremely, and the whole time I'm watching, I'm hate watching it. I said, I'm mad at the show. I'm mad at myself. I'm mad at the world because it is one of the five worst television shows I've ever seen in my entire life. And I don't think I'm, I don't think that's hyperbole.
I think it's
one of the five worst television shows I've ever seen.
I think people forgive laugh tracks when it's on live television on one of the major networks, like 275. Like, they'll let it slide. But Netflix and on-demand stuff...
Is there a difference between a laugh track and a live studio audience?
Well, Roseanne is a live studio audience.
It absolutely is. So is Seinfeld. So is Big Bang Theory. Two and a Half Men, I don't know. But the laugh track or whatever it is.
I just assume it's all the same to me.
I think
it all sounds the same to me.
I think it's a live studio audience, and I think they sprinkle a laugh track in there also. I'm not sure on that.
It doesn't bother me too much. I think that, you know, we grew up in a age where everything had a live studio audience and a laugh track.
Yeah,
so it never really bothers me. Every once in a while, it'll get to me when something just clearly falls flat and it gets that big laugh, but that's TV.
I keep trying with Two and a Half Men, not that I seek it out to watch it, but when it's on, I'll sit there and I'll watch it. The other day, I'm watching an episode and Charlie is passed out drunk and Alan comes out onto the front porch and wakes Charlie up and he's kind of staggers up and he goes, looks like you had a rough night. And he goes, the night was great. It's the morning that's rough. And I'm like, that's not funny.
You perform it.
Why do you keep
thank you.
Why do you keep talking about terrible TV shows when we should be talking about Roseanne?
So Roseanne, okay.
Yeah. All right.
What'd you guys think?
We hate laugh tracks, but we're okay with it with Roseanne because it's what we remember.
So it handled, they touched on the Trump versus Hillary thing.
First half hour was very political. I don't know if Roseanne is a Republican or a Democrat.
I believe Roseanne is a Trump supporter in real life.
Because she sure as hell is on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, she plays it up. DJ just got back from Syria. He's in the armed forces, mm-hmm. which sort of plays to that base.
Yes. Darlene, Sarah Gilbert, I was a little surprised at some of this because she's in the scene. She never really gets involved in the conversations, but isn't she on The View?
Yeah.
Which is very anti-Republican, anti-Trump.
I think she's also a lesbian.
She is, okay. Which there are some really good jokes.
There are some good jokes.
Where Dan and Roseanne say something about her being gay, and she a couple times turns around. She's like, what are you talking about? I am not gay. It was pretty funny. Jackie is staunch Hillary supporter, Democrat.
Right, Democrat, Hillary supporter, and wearing a nasty woman t-shirt, the whole shebang.
Calls Roseanne a deplorable. So the first half hour of the hour premiere is basically political back and forth, which I thought I was going to hate, but I thought I did it. I thought they did it very well.
I typically hate it when it happens on television because it's usually not done well, but they did it really well. They didn't.
Roseanne
didn't
wasn't
shove aside in your face,
and Roseanne wasn't saying stuff as this is the way it is. This is the right opinion. It was Roseanne saying this and Jackie saying this back and forth. And you just had differences of opinion.
I think my favorite line from the first half hour was when they're all sitting at the dinner table and Roseanne says, we're about to say grace. Jackie, you want to take a knee? And it just, for some reason, it cracked me up.
That's not funny.
I enjoyed
it. What does it have to do with praying?
It was just pointing out
Grace,
her.
Grace is playing. It's not the national anthem.
Jesus. This is why we need the laugh track for people like you.
No, I'm
with
serious.
With no sense of humor.
That's why I didn't think that joke was funny.
Roseanne delivered it very well.
It didn't apply.
You don't have to be a by the book on everything. All right.
What about the second half?
The second half was more about Darlene's son.
More of a traditional sitcom, but still a little bit different in that Darlene's son is
9 or 10 years old.
I struggle with the wording. Not gay, transgender.
He's not gay. He just enjoys, he's flamboyant. He likes to wear girls' clothes and vibrant colors. He wears what he wants to wear. And Dan is afraid that he's going to get beat up and picked on at school. So Dan is very against him wearing this stuff, which would typically make you think, like, oh, that guy's a bigot, doesn't want to accept it. But that's not what it is with Dan, and that's not what you would expect with Dan. It's he doesn't want this kid to get beat up at school. And there's a nice talk he has with the kid. There's a good talk he has with Darlene.
It's really well done. It's surprisingly well done. I got probably three laughs out of the hour, which for me, in an hour, if I can get three good laughs, I'm happy.
How many times did you cry?
Two, but I was just thinking about Babe, though.
Yeah, the show is never shied away in the past when it was on.
Right.
Never shied away from controversial issues. I mean, it was always out in the forefront of we're going to be bold. And they're being bold now, which I don't think is a big thing because everything's kind of bold now. But they're not changing. They're just doing the same thing they did back then. It was like it didn't skip a beat.
And John, it was like it didn't skip a beat. And like they just 18 years away and they just fell right back into those characters. And John Ridman's just so good.
Oh, yeah.
At everything.
He's the most believable character on that show.
Oh, absolutely. And he's so good.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Vince is going to watch Roseanne. He's going to, I think he's going to have the same sentiments as us.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see, like, I watched Roseanne when I was a kid, but I'm curious to hear what Vince has to say, being that he's a big Roseanne fan.
Yeah.
Because I watched it, but I was not indifferent, but it wasn't my favorite show when I was younger.
I don't know if that he's like a huge fan, but it was just kind of like everybody liked Roseanne.
18.6 million people watched.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those shows that everybody liked.
18.6 Although, million people watched the second half hour more than watched the first half hour.
I don't know if Vince really counts in this opinion because he doesn't like Seinfeld.
Well, people who don't like Seinfeld don't count in most opinions, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, it's not fair. We're picking on him.
He's not here to defend himself. And it is not fair, and I will not stand for it.
He has no defense for not liking Seinfeld. I've been through the arguments with everybody. I've had the 3-day-long arguments. Anyways.
Okay.
You ready to move on?
Are we going to the push?
Nah, we still need to hear your opinion of Tomb Raider.
Oh, Tomb Raider. Vince and I both said it sucked.
All right. Is that all we need to know?
It took an hour for them to get to any real action of them on the island, of her on the island. Alicia Vikander's awesome, but
how is she in the role? I'm curious.
She's good.
She's a good actress. I'm just curious how she plays the Laura Croft role.
She was good. She was good. It was the story. It was the
Is it like a Tomb Raider origin story?
Yes, it is an absolutely an origin story, and that's why it takes them an hour to get there. There's a stupid bike racing scene, a stupid boxing scene.
Does she punch a shark in the face?
Twice.
Does she really?
Didn't Angelina Jolie punch a shark in the face in Tomb Raider?
I don't remember.
I was laughing because I thought you were going to list off every action scene and start it off with stupid. There's a stupid cliff jumping scene. There's a stupid bridge jumping scene.
Holsters on her thighs.
Vince had a couple points that he wanted me to mention, but I don't remember them. So maybe he'll mention them when he comes back. But we both said skip this movie, and it was an origin story setting up what they wanted to be a bunch of Tomb Raider movies, obviously. And this movie may have killed that plan.
It's never a good thing.
I don't think it did very well. I think Black Panther beat it in the opening weekend again.
In its 10th week.
Right. And it's still outgrossing Tomb Raider in its opening weekend.
That's another movie I can't remember that beat it too. Like Tomb Raider was like in third or fourth place.
Yeah, that is not good news for the Tomb Raider.
That's not good for a franchise, for what you hope to be the start of a franchise.
It had a martial arts dude from a TV show, Into the Badlands.
Oh yeah, the main guy.
Yeah, what's his name? Do you know?
Don't know.
Okay, but Vince loves the guy, and he was so looking forward to him kicking somebody in the face, and there were no martial arts moves by him.
That's disappointing.
Yeah,
he is a badass on that show.
Yeah, and then Boyd Crowder, who I mentioned, Walton Goggins, who is the greatest TV villain of all time as Boyd Crowder.
Yes, that is the season of Justified that I watched. Yeah. The first.
Well, he's in every season.
Well,
and he's great.
I didn't
in
make
season.
It too far, but I enjoyed
he,
him.
Yeah.
He was bad too in it.
No. He was good. Alicia Vikander was good. Dominic West was, eh. But
don't you besmirch McNulty.
No, I loved McNulty. I mean, I liked The Wire a lot, and I liked McNulty. He was a great character. In this movie, Dominic West is just kind of like, eh.
All right.
Tomb Raider.
Vince and I both said skip
don't
it.
Don't go see it.
Yeah, he had some other points that I didn't mention, but he can tell you about them later.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. Vince, if you're listening, look at the timestamp. We're about to talk about The Push. You need to skip past The Push, listen to it, and then we'll talk about it again next week because this is that good.
That good.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. The Push is a 1 hour and 18 minute.
Sounds right.
Documentary? Would you call it a documentary?
It is a documentary.
It's classified as 1 hour and 8 minute documentary / reality TV.
Okay, yeah. I'd say that's how you would describe it.
Hardcore social experiment.
Hardcore social experiment.
Darren Brown is an English TV personality, and I have no idea who he is. I've never seen him.
Me either. First time I ever saw him.
But I think he is at least semi-well-known in England.
Seems that way.
And he does an experiment to see how far someone can be pushed with social compliance.
Let's talk about the beginning, because I turned this thing on. I had heard about it and that it was premiering, so I wanted to check it out because it seemed interesting. And then it had me hooked in the first 5 minutes when they do the smaller experiment of the guy in the coffee shop. There's a guy working in a coffee shop, and he has an actor call him.
I don't know if that guy was an actor. I think he might have been actual, like, law enforcement.
No, he was an actor.
Was he just an actor?
He had an actor call him into the coffee shop while another actor pushed in a baby carriage, and he told the guy behind the counter at the coffee shop, hello, this is so-and-so from the London police or wherever they were.
He says, is there a girl that looks like this in there?
With a baby carriage. And then he goes, that is not that child's mother. She is taking that child.
She's a known child abductor.
We need you to tell her she has a phone call. And when she comes to get the phone call, take that baby carriage and get out of there. We're right around the corner to the right. And the guy, because somebody calls him on the phone saying they're a cop, takes someone's child and walks out the door with it because he's conditioned to listen to the police.
He does say, because he's on his cell phone with the guy now, and he does say, I don't feel right doing this. This is something that I would never do. Yet he takes the baby and pushes it down the street and takes off.
And when I see how easy it is for them to get this guy to do that, now I'm 5 minutes in. I'm hooked and can't wait to see what's next.
So social compliance is when they're testing for this show, what they do is they have three people sitting in chairs. And there's about 10 empty chairs next to them. The three people sitting in the chairs are all actors. And they bring a person in, and they sit down next to the people. They're all filling out paperwork, and then somebody rings a bell. The three actors know every time this bell rings, they stand up. When the bell rings again, they sit down. So the guy who's not an actor looks over, sees them stand up, and he stands up with them. And then he sits down. And then they bring 10 people in, and they're all standing up and sitting down.
Asking questions.
Right. No question. And then
nobody's told them anything.
They're just filling out their pre-paperwork. So he's well known in England. So they are all coming to be on a show that he's producing. So they bring them all in, and they're doing these different experiments is compliant.
They take the original three out. And now you've got about 10 to 15 people standing up and sitting down at a ring of a bell that were never told to do that.
And that's where they'd lose me. That's where I would not be chosen for The Push. Because once I'm sitting down, I'm sitting down.
There was one girl. there was one girl that was sitting there writing, filling out her thing. They're ringing the bell and everybody's standing up. She never even looked at them.
Yeah.
She just stayed sitting down, filling out her paperwork. And then they went in and said, can you come with me? And she was out.
Yeah.
So out of these people, they pick one person. And they're going to go through a night at a fundraiser event and try through social compliance, see how far they can push this guy, and eventually leading up to him murdering somebody. That's their plan. Now, of course, the murder won't actually happen. It's actors, but the guy will think that he's murdering somebody.
Every single person at this gala, 70 or so people, I think they said.
Yeah, every single person is
an actor and in on it, except for the guy. And he's trying to network in this big fundraising gala while he's also running their website and their brochure and everything. So that's how he gets introduced to this gala. So they have him there under the guise of working for them and also giving him an opportunity to network with some bigwigs and hopefully grow his business while he's there.
They start off with the social compliance with very small favors. hey, can you do this for me real quick? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just
now you've done me a small favor. Let's step it up. And they keep stepping up these favors till they get bigger and bigger, till eventually a guy has a heart attack and dies. And it's like, hey, we need this guy to disappear for this this fundraiser to continue. Otherwise, all's lost. Let's take the body out of here. We'll tell people that he died afterwards. Let's have the gala. We can't ruin this event. Let's put him in this crate.
The guy who has the heart attack is the foundation's biggest donor, and the point of the gala is an auction of things that he has donated
towards kids. Another important thing is that they have a clip of popular movie stars. Martin Freeman's one of them. Isn't that his name?
Yeah, Martin Freeman.
David Tennant, where they're talking about...
the organization is called PUSH.
PUSH. Yeah, and they're talking about, for the kids, whatever it takes, make this happen. Whatever it takes. They're all saying, whatever it takes, which is getting into his head. You have to do whatever it takes to make this event happen.
That's crazy.
It starts real small. It starts with asking him to get somebody a drink. Mm-hmm. He obviously doesn't think twice about it. Then they're back in the kitchen. And
Can you grab that suitcase?
They didn't bring the vegetarian option appetizers. So he says, will you stick these flags that say vegetarian in these sausage rolls?
So now, once he agrees to do that, now he is doing something. That's the first thing that he's done that he knows is wrong. I mean, you don't take actual sausage hors d'oeuvres and tag them as vegetarian to serve to people, or vegan. Yeah. That's the first thing that he did that he knew was wrong. And then that leads up to
minor, but it steps up and steps up throughout mm-hmm. the course of the evening to where...
At one point, Bernie is the guy that Bernie's has a heart attack donor. That dies. And at one point, somebody comes up to him and calls him Bernie. And the guy leaves and he looks at the guy that is in on it. And he says, he does know that I'm not Bernie, right? He's like, oh, no big deal. Just let that go. And then they get into the room where Bernie's supposed to make a speech. And the guy points to him and says, Bernie, come up and make a speech. And he goes up there and makes a speech as Bernie when he thinks Bernie's dead and locked in a trunk. Now he's in deep.
I mean, one of the really cool things about the show, too, is that if you have a guy who's playing dead, because there is sort of a weekend at Bernie's vibe going on here towards the end. Because
I thought, just like the Darren Brown said, that guy's doing a tremendous job of playing dead.
I did, too. I said, this guy's too good at playing dead. But they hired the best makeup artist and special effects people. And
they said it was the first time ever that this fake body was made that looks, feels, and moves exactly like a dead body. The guy could not tell.
I mean, no, and then they had the Bernie looking over the fake Bernie, the actual and it was looking at creepy how similar they
He's
were.
He's like, this is so weird because, I mean, you see yourself in mirrors, in pictures, but you've never seen yourself like in three dimensions like this. He said it was really creepy. So all this goes on and he keeps getting deeper and deeper until the very final payoff is up on the roof.
Wait. We got to stop real quick.
You want to go back and do more?
We just got to do one thing. The part where I would have, like the whole time I'm watching it, I'm trying to decide if I would do the things that he's doing. You know, of course, we're all going to do that while we watch it. And it's the most important part is they end up taking Bernie down and hiding him in a corridor until the end. And then, they hide him and then he's gone because he has a disease.
Yeah, they said that his wife shows up and says, oh, give Bernie these pills. If he doesn't take them, he could basically go comatose where it looks like he's dead. And that's when they realize, oh, shit, Bernie's not dead. We were moving him around.
We were stuffing him in crates and moving him around. And so they can't find him. They end up finding him.
On the roof.
Well, before they find out that he's comatose, they need to sell the story that he fell down the stairs. So they say, you got to kick him. You got to rough him up a little bit to give him bruises.
The guy who's not in on it, Chris, they try getting him to kick the body to give him some bruises.
And that's where I think I would have tapped out.
Yeah,
I would have said.
Chris did. He didn't kick him.
He didn't kick him, no. And that's where I think I would have tapped out, too. And because up till then, I can explain it away to the cops until I kick him.
But they weren't lost on the experiment. They're still going to get him to try to kill Bernie.
Right.
So with the medicine thing, they realize Bernie's up on the roof, and there's now six people that know about what happened, and Chris is in very deep with no way out, thinking, I'm going to go to prison for this. And Bernie is now sitting on the roof having a cigarette with his back to everybody. And they all take a vote that we need to kill Bernie to keep all of us from going to prison and make sure that this fundraiser happens. And Chris ultimately says, no, I'm not going to do that. And they're like, you have to. I mean, if you're not going to do it, you need to get the hell out of here and leave. And he says, I'm leaving.
He says, I'll go to jail. I'm leaving.
And he walks away. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
For the first half an hour, all I wanted to do was see somebody get pushed to kill somebody. And then when it came down to it, I was like, don't do it, Chris. Don't do it, right. Chris.
And when he didn't do it, I was like, oh, thank God. You cannot push a person to commit murder through social compliance. And then he says, we did this experiment with three other people. And they show you bits and pieces of the whole thing through the three other people.
All your main points that we just talked about, they show what the other people did in those situations.
They all went along with it. All three of the others.
All three of them kicked
the body. And all three of the others pushed Bernie off the ledge.
All three of them.
My mouth was wide open, staring at the TV with my hands covering my face for about 10 minutes watching this and just disbelief.
Two women and one man. It wasn't the same gender, or two women and one man, and the man was a little bit of a creep. I kind of saw that coming.
Yeah.
But the rest of them,
surprised. All three of them cried when they did it, but they did it. Now, Bernie was out. I mean, the actor was, I had a harness on that they could not see. So when they pushed him, they thought they killed him.
Yeah.
And then right away, Darren Brown would run out and tell them that you didn't actually kill that guy. Come over here. Look, he's on a harness down there. He's still alive. But
those people are murderers.
Well, they're not. They didn't kill anybody.
They are murderers. They have to live the rest of their lives knowing that they
would have killed somebody.
Can be murderers. Like, I don't think I could kill somebody. I really don't. And I can have that thought in the back of my mind for the rest of my life. Because I haven't been put in that situation.
I know I could. I don't know if I could in that situation. I might have done the same thing as those other three. I cannot say.
I wouldn't have kicked the body. And if you don't kick the body, you're okay.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe they only went through with it because they complied with everything.
The kicking of the body is what puts it over the top, because now Bernie's alive and walking around and has bruises all over his chest, and he's saying that he's going to send you to jail.
Yeah, but...
Up to that point, you can, like, you might get some probation for being an idiot, but...
This one-hour documentary was one of the most amazing social experiments I've ever watched.
Yeah, I want so much more of it. Like, I want six seasons of different experiments from Darren Brown, is his name?
Yeah.
Do you think it's fair that they did that to the other three people?
I don't at all.
I don't either.
I don't at all. And the thing is that, like I said, they came in under the guise of applying for another reality show that he was doing. So I don't think he had to tell them anything, because they probably all signed release waivers when they applied for whatever show he was doing. So
probably all got final approval to allow their faces to be shown for the conclusion.
Yeah, I'm sure. But none of that changes. And I don't think it matters if it airs or not. What really matters is that you know in your heart that you would have just killed that man.
Yeah.
And yesterday, you never thought that was possible.
Not for a second.
That could change somebody for the rest of their life, and that's why I don't think it's fair.
Yeah.
But they were pushed into it. I mean, the push. I mean,
I don't think it's fair, but damn, was it entertaining.
Yes. Talk about Ex Machina and Annihilation wanting those to be thought-provoking stuff. This was thought-provoking.
It was incredible. I've watched it twice already. I'll probably watch it a third time and probably a fourth time, because it just, and it stays with you too, because you can imagine being those people who have been pushed to this level. And it,
you know, in a way, I would like to have been in that situation to see what I would have done, because you'll never know now. I mean, you never know what you would have done.
No, I can't say for 100% what I would have done, but I can say 100% that I can say 90% that I would never have been picked for the show, because I wouldn't have gone with the bell up and down.
I don't think I would have either, because I don't know. I feel like I'm more of a person that would look over and be like, what are you idiots doing?
I would say, did somebody tell you to stand up when they rang that bell?
Right.
And everyone would have been like, huh? And I would have been like, okay.
Now, again, I can't say for sure, but if I go in, if they put that test on me and I go into a room and people are doing it, I'm going to be like, ah, I know what this is because I've seen it. But yeah. I would have liked to have been at least put to that test to see. So I would have had an answer of would I have done it or not.
I did a similar experiment on a friend of mine one time. We used to go to the bar far too often, get home, and then he would make a ham sandwich. So every time he would make a ham sandwich, I'd turn on the same song on the CD player, sort of like a Pavlov's dog experiment. And then I tried it one time.
Ring a bell and I'll salivate.
It was weird. It worked. I played the song. He goes, I'd go for a sandwich. I swear to you.
Oh, nice.
Our minds are strange.
What song?
As weird as it sounds, it was Bob Seger, Hollywood Night.
Okay. Now, if you would have said, as weird as it sounds, I can't remember the song, I'd have said, now I think your story's bullshit.
No, it was Bob Seger, good. Hollywood Night. It was like the first song on a Bob Seger Greatest Hits CD, and that's what was in the CD player the first time, so that was the song that remained.
I'm just so glad you didn't say, I can't remember the song.
It was just a weird song choice.
Okay, The Push. Wrapped up, done.
Highly recommend.
Yes, absolutely.
As high as I can recommend.
And Welcome Back. That's usually where we put our, for the people who skipped ahead, our Welcome Back Cotter.
I got you.
All right, Barry.
Barry.
Do you have that queued up?
I have Barry queued up.
All right. Bill Hader. From Saturday Night Live fame. He was also one of the cops in, with Seth Rogen. No, not Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen.
Superbad?
Yeah, Superbad.
Alec Berg, also on the creative team.
Okay.
From Seinfeld.
Yes, I heard that.
Written and directed by those two.
All right. No other stars in the show, is there?
Steven Root. He's been around.
Oh, Steven Root.
Oh, Henry Winkler as well.
Henry Winkler, Steven Root from Dodgeball and also Office Space. We also had, I believe, the bald albino looking guy. Do you remember who I'm talking about from the show?
Yeah.
I believe he is Victor Zsasz in Gotham.
Okay.
The hitman. But
if you're a Victor Zsasz fan.
Or a Gotham fan.
You got to check out Barry.
Okay. So Barry plays a hitman?
Barry plays a hitman who believes he's killing bad people. Steven Root is...
Does he really care?
I think he does care.
Really?
Because they mention it three times in the pilot and Steven Root is his father's friend. Barry came back from war without a purpose, and this is his purpose that his father's friend gave him.
Yes, something that he's good at.
Right, he's good at it, and it gives him purpose. And I think it gives him purpose because he thinks he's killing bad guys.
Okay, but he stumbles into an acting class for the guy he's supposed to kill. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, his new target was in an acting class, and he happened to stumble in there.
Now, his new target was that the guy who played Drexel.
Yes.
Okay. So in the acting class, his target tells him, hey, you're going to read with me. I got this scene in my acting class. Come on. He pulls him out there, and the guy sits there and does a whole scene as Drexel Spivey from True Romance, one of my favorite movies. And it was fucking hilarious. He does a bad Drexel Spivey.
Yeah. It's a bad acting class filled with bad actors.
It is. Might be better than I could do, but I mean, if you've seen True Romance, then you'll laugh your ass off in that scene because it was hilarious.
And even if you haven't seen it in 20 years like me, you'll still laugh your ass off at that scene. It's pretty good.
Barry, it's only a half hour.
Half hour, first HBO. Episode. Good starting episode.
At the end of the episode, he decides he wants to continue to take acting lessons.
Yeah, he feels like he's found something that he could be good at. And something that gives him a new purpose in life that isn't killing people.
Right.
So he's going to be going fighting with the forces of the people that want him to continue doing the murdering and also chasing what his new passion is. And from all indications, he's going to be a terrible actor.
Right.
But he's paying for Winkler's class.
Yeah, the Fonz told him he was terrible at it.
Right, but then he told him the truth, and the fun's like, did you just make that up? That's an excellent scene.
Yeah, right. It looks like it's going to be a funny show. And I've always liked Bill Hader.
I'm a big Bill Hader fan.
Yeah. Not a hater?
Not a hater.
You know Bill Hader?
Yep.
Personally?
Yep.
All right. Get him on the show.
I'm trying.
All right. Any other wrap-ups here before our third act?
I think that covers it.
Okay. Third act, we gave this to you last week as a revisit, but it didn't transfer through to you guys, so we're giving it again. War Games. And we gave you a couple weeks ago Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
And why did you give those movies?
That was the exact question I was looking for. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Both these movies are prominent in the Ready Player One book by Ernest Cline. And this weekend, we have the release of the movie, Steven Spielberg, Ready Player One. And I, for one, am super pumped about it. My son, I told him, hey, dude, before you go see the movie this weekend, you should rent the book and read it. He breezed through the book in probably 5-6 days. I was super proud of him. Awesome. And he loved it. And he was pumped about the movie anyways, but now I'm sure he's more pumped about the movie. We're making a big date of it, a bunch of us going on. Hopefully we're going on Easter Sunday. It's Easter Sunday for some of us. Not really me, not really Sweatin, but not really Vince.
It is for me.
Yeah, a lot of the population considers it Easter Sunday. So
that's the day my Lord rose.
My Lord rose the week after.
You guys believe in zombies.
He's a busy guy. How dare you?
Okay, so War Games, because this movie was prominent in the book, because they did walk through. You read the book, right, Sutton?
Uh-huh.
Okay, they did walk through movies in the Oasis to where you were actually part of the movie and you had to dictate the lines to progress through the game. And that's why we chose War Games. And when we talked about it, I said I haven't seen that movie in probably 20 years.
And I still haven't.
Really?
How did it hold up?
I watched it again. And it was probably longer than 20 years, honestly, that I've seen it. But it was really good.
Really?
It was very, very good. Matthew Broderick, Ally Sheedy, two main characters. Ally Sheedy looks really cute. Really good. In yoga pants a lot.
Oh, my.
Yeah. But Matthew Broderick is really good in the movie. His acting is great. The guy who plays Falcon, Henry Falcon, I believe is the main doctor's or the scientist's name. He's really good. His lines aren't that great, but at the end scene when they're in the big war room or whatever, his little mannerisms and looks he gives to are great. With and last time I couldn't remember the name of the computer, the Whopper. That was the name of the computer.
Okay.
And some of the computer stuff doesn't hold up throughout time because the computer was as big as a basically a like freezer, like a what do they call those, the big rectangle with the stand-up freezer,
a chest freezer.
Chest freezer, thank you. And
you get caught up on the weirdest things. I need to know the name of this that I'm describing.
And the computer, every time they like close up on the computer, and I don't know how this is going to transfer, but it's like really bassy and it's really loud like that. And if you got your bass turned up, it's going to kill you. But the movie is outstanding about global thermonuclear war, which holds up today.
Yeah, always will.
Yeah, I love the movie. I loved it more than I remembered I loved it. So,
well, now I'm going to have to go watch it.
It was good. It was really good. And then watch that movie and then go see Ready Player One. And I got to talk to Vince when he gets back, but next episode might be 100% about Ready Player One.
Hopefully in a good way.
Yeah, because if we go see it and absolutely hate it, it's going to be like, all right, that was a 5-minute episode.
Oh, I'm sure if you absolutely hate it, it'll probably be 2.5 hours. If you love it, it might be an hour.
Yeah, right. Okay, and then next week, Vince gave me Green Room for my homework assignment, which I'm not going to talk about today. We'll talk about basically two homework assignments next week since Vince will be back. And we'll talk about Green Room. And he already knows that my homework assignment for him is Godfather 2. And we will talk about that one. So you can hit us up on PricksOnFlicks at gmail.com. PricksOnFlicks on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share.
With an X.
Yes. Pricks with an X. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
Scott, you got the Twitter?
I got the Twitter. I don't know what it is.
You
want to
put out your Twitter?
Sure. Why not?
Handle? Is that what the kids call it? The Twitter handle?
I call it. I don't know what I call it. I don't even know what mine is, if I'm being 100% honest. I think it's my name. Let's look.
Is Vince
Scott McGinnis 82? McGinnis
82, and I believe Vince is 82 also, isn't it? Vince Romero 82.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are probably the same age.
Probably. That's my birth year.
Mine is Chris Barney 3, KRIS, and we have that voicemail that we give out every week. But
I'll put it on the description.
There you go. The voicemail.
209 and five more numbers or yeah, whatever.
Seven more numbers.
I don't use phones.
We don't even need seven numbers.
All right, Scott, a lot of times when we end the shows here, we like to end with a movie quote. Sometimes they're really relevant and important, and, like life.
And sometimes
they're just funny.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Nice. Sreten, you got one?
I had to bring it back. Yeah.
I don't have any.
Okay. I don't think you've had one yet.
Right, here's mine. Okay. Ready?
Hulk smash!
All right, and
as relevant today as ever.
Mine is, they got everything here from a diddle-eyed Joe to a damned if I know.